Welcome to the Project Botany Insectarium. Here we keep thousands of living bugs and hundreds of thousands of preserved bugs for study and examination. The entomologists here have their work cut out for them. I'll have one of the techs take us over to the preserved display section, and we'll begin our tour there. A lot of the insects here are easily recognizable, like the monarch butterfly or the American bumblebee. These bugs are some of the more helpful pollinators. However, plants, insects, and other pests have had a storied history. The normal biosphere of a given area has a distribution of flora and fauna. This leads to competition and biodiversity in a given area. Meaning, if a species of plant starts to die because of changes in the environment or other factors, it has a smaller impact on the entire species across thousands of square miles. If a pest preys on a specific species of plant, there is usually something there to eat that pest, and things stay in balance as long as nothing too catastrophic happens, like an ice age. Then, humans came into the picture. At first, one could argue humans had a little impact on the world around them. Then, humans got smart, and there were lots of them. This led to changes in the environment that nothing was ready for. Just ask the woolly mammoth. Agriculture brought a lot of change. We started quickly and effectively, selectively breeding plants for desirable traits like yield and even taste. This led to the creation of farms and monoculture. Monoculture is the practice of planting a single crop or plant over a large area. This disrupted the diverse biosphere we were talking about earlier. No longer did an insect or other herbivores have to spend a lot of time to find their favorite plant. There were thousands of them in a single area. This tilted the scale of competition and resources in the favor of resources and led to population booms. This spelled the doom of the crops being watched over by ancient farmers, as the farmers themselves would watch their crops being eaten before they even had a chance to harvest them. Something had to be done, and that would become pest management. Follow me to the IPM lab, and we will talk a little more about pest management. IPM stands for Integrated Pest Management, but it's more than just sprays and bait. It involves bringing a wider range of controls to bear and to control the pests in question. Let's return to the ancient human analogy. Some of the earliest pest control methods included using folk remedies to control the pests. Things like hanging a crayfish in the field or praying to your different gods. These methods were not all that effective, but things did advance with the Greeks and Egyptians. First, the Egyptians used a unique kind of pest control, cats. They didn't invent the use per se, but they were known for using it. Cats would be used to keep mice and other rodents out of the grain they had stored up. The Greeks were some of the first to use chemicals to repel insects. They invented a mixture called amurica, which is still used today in some parts of the world. Amurica was made up of crushed olives and salt. This was used to take care of caterpillars and ants that would get into food or plants still in the field. Then the Romans stole the idea and added copper to it, which improved its effectiveness. Later, the Romans even used a seed coating made of hemlock and other plants to kill pests. This had the added advantage of not passing any of the harmful chemicals onto the humans eating the mature plant. This is actually a big step in agriculture as a whole, and seed coatings are used today by many seed companies across the world. I think the techs have a few samples of outdated and antiquated chemicals used as pest control. Let me ask. I was able to get some, but they said I had to be especially careful with a few of these, and to not let the lead technician know. The first example is arsenic. That's right, arsenic. One of the most toxic compounds known to mankind. It's not only deadly to humans, but to most other forms of life. It disrupts the production of ATP, the main source of energy in a living organism. Unfortunately, it had a way of getting to the end consumer. Next is DDT. DDT was invented by Paul Miller during World War II, and was used to keep battlefields and soldiers clear of insects. Sold as something safe and easy to use, it changed the lives of soldiers on the battlefield. Not long after, 2,4-D, a powerful herbicide, was created in 1944, and it, along with DDT, came back to the United States, heroes alongside the GIs. Farms jumped at the opportunity to use something that was much safer than the arsenic compounds they had been using to this point. These two chemicals sparked a chemical revolution, and also led to the publishing of a groundbreaking book that helped the world see the true impact of the use of chemicals at the time. Let's head to the library and take a look. Silent Spring was written by Rachel Carson in 1962. Up to this point, the use of pesticides had done a lot for humanity by increasing yields and reducing crop stresses. The book brought to light the issues of chemical overuse. Too many agricultural and household chemicals were finding their way into the natural environment and wreaking havoc on plant and animal life. With word getting out that Carson's book was gaining traction in the public and even support in major magazines like the New York Times, companies like DuPont, a large chemical manufacturer, tried to halt the publication of the book. Many claimed that Carson's radical ideas would destroy modern agronomy and drive us back to the Dark Ages. However, such claims were false, as Carson proposed spraying just enough to deal with the pest in question and avoiding overuse. Carson's work was published despite the backlash and brought about some surprising changes. Her book became part of the environmental movement at the time and inspired the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States. Silent Springs would be named one of the top 25 greatest science books of all time, and rightfully so. Modern chemical use on plants pivots on Carson's work and the advances it brought. Many chemicals used up to this point were either banned or heavily regulated by the EPA and other governing bodies. Modern pest management is still dealing with growing pains, but we have a better solution now. Integrated pest management, or as the UN describes it, the careful consideration of all available pest control techniques and subsequent integration of appropriate measures that discourage the development of pest populations and keep pesticides and other interventions to levels that are economically justified and reduce or minimize risk to human health and the environment. IPM is broken down into six principles: acceptable pest levels, which brings an emphasis to control versus eradication; preventative cultural practices, involves keeping your plants clean and healthy by promoting a sterile environment and quarantining new plants; monitoring is the constant observation of plants in question, like a forest, for the signs of pests and tracking their impact; mechanical control is using physical means to reduce the effects of pests, like plucking or traps; biological controls involves promoting the natural predators of the pest in order to bring the population down to acceptable economic levels. Lastly is responsible use. Sometimes you have to use a chemical to save a crop or a stand of trees. Proper usage of the chemical and applying it at times where they will be most effective reduces the chance of the chemical harming non-target species while bringing the pest population down to manageable levels. That was a lot of technical stuff. Let's head into one of the arboretums for a quick breather. Nature has regulated itself pretty well for millions of years. If a population gets too big or a species overreaches its boundaries, something like a predator or a prey adaptation is not too far behind to put things back into balance, and I think that we shouldn't mess with that. This arboretum here, for example, is several acres large and maintains itself rather well. Few controls are needed to keep it healthy, as long as we let nature do its thing. Sometimes we have to step in, but we try to disrupt as little as possible and stick to our integrated pest management plan. So, next time you're out watching a pest munch on your precious petunias or a lilac bush, don't go straight for the chemicals. Implement your own IPM plan. It's better for all of us when you do. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Project Botany.